the thing that really kind of shocked me was just the area that these guys were coming from. I had long assumed that we were fighting, you know, again, I mean, you know, we're kind of like, you know, just incubated as far as where information is coming from. So, you know, you fight a guy on the street, you figure he's an Iraqi. We're starting to see Africans. We're starting to see Asians, you know, after firefights. Fallujah, you know, I call it the global all-star team of Islamic aggression. I mean, it literally had people from all over the world. Chechnya, the Philippines, you name it, they all came to one little area. And these guys were literally running with rockets and firing them at a level of expertise that these kids, they had to have been learning this, you know, at a school age. I mean, it you know, I know enough about my craft and my profession to know what it takes. You take a green recruit and you teach him how to, you know, shoulder a weapon and you know, you're going to have to put some time into that young man to expect him to run and to do these things on the fly and a dead sprint. You know, I'm used to stalking the enemy. Never had had the enemy stalk me. That's humbling to see when you're seeing the enemy bound towards your position, when you have Marines, Navy, Air Force. I mean, Fallujah literally was my generation's Normandy Beach. I'm not saying it was at the level of Normandy Beach. I'm saying for my generation, there was never been a firefight, a battle, that had all the branches of service shoulder to shoulder. Fallujah was it. It was our Super Bowl.
But part of it, too, is as a Super Bowl, you know, it's not the NFL versus the high school All-Stars. It's the two best teams in the NFL. And in this case, you've got these guys who are much more sophisticated in booby trapping the houses that you are going house to house with than you were anticipating.
It was unbelievable. There was one in particular. This guy took cinder blocks, and you know how at an airport they'll serpentine the traffic. Basically, they'll canal you in so that you can't speed up. They might put little jersey barriers, little concrete structures, and make you kind of drive left and right, snake you around to control the traffic. Well, this guy built basically a serpentined maze that was about 11 feet high of cinder blocks, and you basically followed the maze to the front door. And as you looked up out of the maze on the rooftop, he had two little machine gun nests so he could shoot down at you, and there were IEDs at the entrance and at the exit. I mean, it's like they're playing games. They knew that the American soldiers and Marines like to take rooftops out. And one of the things that we like to do is, you know, at Gettysburg, you had little round top and big round top. You know, wars have always been fought on elevation, high ground. In a city, your elevation and your high ground are the tops of buildings. So the key is to occupy that terrain, grab that top of the tallest building. And then as you're going building to building, you know, you don't want to just go through the door every time. You want to go, you know, see, you know, rooftop down to the bottom floor, and then bottom floor to the rooftop, and mix it up so you kind of, you know, can surprise someone if you can. Well, these guys knew that we wanted to get to the rooftop, so they would literally seal every one of the doors that was facing a road, just makeshift mortar and brick. And then when we would jump rooftop to rooftop, they removed the roofs so that you literally jumped down multiple stories onto basically large metal rods and explosives. The most terrifying aspect of this invasion was the what we call the BCID, a building contained IED, improvised explosive device. It's a house bomb, a building bomb. You walk in, they have C4 explosives all over the stress bearing walls. They, you know, basically have gasoline and you know, just to a concussion. And in one case, they had a MiG-23, a Russian jet. It's a drop tank in the middle of a house, in the middle of the room. When you walk in and you see that, the, you know, it's like that. don't know if you ever had that nightmare where you're in a road and a car's coming and your legs are like concrete.
Right.
You see that and you're like, you know what? Man, I could have been a Green Beret. I could have been the, you know, Captain America, Spider-Man, any superhero is going to die in this house. It doesn't matter who you are, what you've done. Your life is over if anyone steps on a wire, leans on the wall. You know, it literally is it got to the point where I had to tell my soldiers to stop looking for booby traps because we were so concerned that we were going to trip a wire or, you know, trigger something that we stopped hunting the guys that we're trying to kill. So I can't have a bunch of 19-year-old kids looking for a wire when they're supposed to run through a door and shoot whoever's waiting for us.
But at the same time, it was important for you to know, too, as you talk about that sense that these guys that you were trying to find were way ahead of you. They knew where you were going to be. They knew what you were going to be experiencing. They were controlling your experience in Fallujah up to a point.
I would say up to probably the second week, absolutely. The one thing, the one aspect that really was, to me, psychologically debilitating to the soldiers that I was leading, you know, just to give a quick background, Fallujah is a city about the size of Tampa Bay, Florida. The entire population was in place when an April offensive of 2004 was stalled by the White House. Command didn't want, you know, civilian population to be killed. The civilian population left, and they basically, the administration had put in what was called a Fallujah Brigade. They gave them uniforms, equipment, and all of our stuff that we use to protect us, our force protection, bomb blast walls, and big bins that keep, you know, bullets from entering walls and all that great stuff. And they gave it to the Fallujah Brigade and said, look, you want the Americans out? We're out. You guys take care of yourself. Well, they became the enemy. And so now we're basically fighting against not only our own equipment, but our own uniforms. And so we, you know, had these kids that were like, you know, I'd have a soldier and he'd tell me, hey, put your chin strap on. And he'd be like, why? And I'm like, well, because, you know, that chin strap is going to save your life. Put your uniform on. You know, every single time that these guys wanted to take their stuff off because they were hot, I would have to be like a father and tell them, no, put that back on. You're going to wear that. It's going to save your life. And now our enemy's wearing that. So let me show you exactly where to shoot on the helmet to, you know, neutralize it so you can kill the guy who's wearing the same helmet that you're wearing. And so the soldier would be like, wait a minute. If you know how to do that to our equipment, how come why can't they do it to ours? You know what I mean? Like, right. All this time you've been telling me our equipment's the best in the world. Now we're going to fight against guys who look like us and dress like us? Yeah, they were wearing our uniform. They had our equipment. Everything that we went to bed and had confidence that we would wake up in the morning, the enemy had it too. And that's really tough for me. It was tough for me, and I'm sure it was tough for my soldiers as well. My God, you know, there were times we would shoot guys in the street, and I would have to count everyone.